You're listening to Catholic Chicago Week in Review on Relevant Radio 950 AM and 930 AM. During the next hour, the Archdiocese of Chicago brings you conversation about the people, events, and issues that touch our lives. Welcome to Catholic Chicago Week in Review.
Good morning. I'm Jim Dish with the Archdiocese of Chicago's Radio TV office. Every Saturday morning here on Relevant Radio, we listen to highlights of our Catholic Chicago radio programs that air throughout the week. Let's begin with this past Monday's program, when Holy Name Cathedral Rector Father Greg Sakowitz talked to a priest and a couple lawyers about their upcoming Day of Reflection. But as you'll hear, they couldn't resist reflecting on the Super Bowl.
Day after Super Bowl 52, what a game. We'll talk about it once we introduce the guests, because one of our guests is in deep mourning. So, gentlemen, welcome. And the Catholic Lawyers Guild of Chicago is presenting its 2018 Day of Reflection on Saturday, February 24th. We have three guests in studio to talk about this upcoming event. We'll also update us on the Guild's Restorative Justice Project, which was developed to counter violence in our city. So in studio, our guests are Matthew Simon, former president of the Catholic Lawyers Guild of Chicago, 2017 Catholic Lawyer of the Year, a key player in the Restorative Justice Project. Great friend of mine, Father Bob Cook, Franciscan friar and associate chaplain of the Catholic Lawyers Guild, a lawyer before joining the Franciscan Order, pastor in Chicago at St. Ida Parish, and Alex Blair, an attorney at Siegel, McCambridge, Singer, and Mahoney in Chicago. After pursuing a career in sports journalism, Alex attended Notre Dame Law School. He was president of the St. Thomas More Society. So to Father Bob, Matthew, and Alex, welcome to our program this morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Father.
Good morning, Father. Good morning.
But I have to admit, Bob, I'm so happy Philadelphia won, but I know that you are in complete mourning.
I am.
And not M-O-R-N-I-N-G. And that's right, you were raised in the Boston area,
yeah,
weren't you?
Yeah, I grew up outside of Boston, and so today is...
I even heard it in your voice.
Yeah.
Thanks
there
for
is no
in.
Joy in Mudville.
But I have to admit, I really thought
it was a good
the
game.
Patriots would pull it out. And they had like 1,150 combined offensive yards. That's incredible. And it was just it was a real shootout.
I am happy for the city of Philadelphia today. I mean, it's really obviously a source of great joy for them.
You don't mean it. I know Father Bob Cook well. You didn't mean a word of that. But you had such a sincerity of your heart. I could just tell. But you realize in the 52 Super Bowls, it was the first Philadelphia Super Bowl victory. Mm-hmm. In fact, their last NFL championship was 1960, and that's been a long time. So, listen, who wants to tell us first about the big event happening on February 24th? The 2018 Day of Reflection.
Well, I could start it off. And the leader of our Day of Reflection is Father Joseph Doust, who's a Jesuit who is currently serving as rector of the Jesuit community on the Pine Ridge Reservation. And the Jesuits have worked with the Lakota for almost 130 years. And they established a mission and a school there in the late 1800s at the request of Chief Red Cloud, who was one of the few chiefs that actually defeated the U.S. Army. And then what he realized was that the U.S. Army and its military and its mechanized system of warfare was too much for his people to continue to push back. So he tried to he entered into treaties with the United States, which unfortunately we never respected. And so he doesn't have the same reputation as Crazy Horse, for example, who is a young Indian warrior who died in the peak of in the prime of his life. But Red Cloud actually was a much greater leader and actually I think a more thoughtful person. And the reason I raise that is that he at the time the United States was establishing was having religious communities. They were mostly Protestant, established churches in an effort to assimilate the Native Americans. And Red Cloud requested that the Jesuits serve, that it was Father DeSchmidt serve, because he had met DeSchmidt and he respected him, and he felt that DeSchmidt respected their culture. And so he requested this because he thought that the Jesuits could, and it was Franciscan nuns, too, that were part of the effort.
Now, along those lines, there's a great history there. And then in the sense of that you have this February 24th Day of Reflection for Lawyers, Father Bob, how long has that history happened? How many days of retreats have there been in past years?
Oh, gosh, it's been, how many years has it been, Matthew? It's been a part of the history of the Guild from almost its inception, hasn't it?
Correct.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, there are so many lawyer jokes, lawyer about this, lawyer about that, and we sometimes forget behind the legal part of a lawyer is a human being, a man or a woman, who somehow seeks to connect the mystery of God with our lives. So say more about the why of the Day of Retreat, Father Bob.
Well, as we heard, from the Second Vatican Council, there is a universal call to holiness and that everyone is called to become a saint, right? And you do it within the context of your lives. And, one's profession is such an important part of who they are, particularly for lawyers, and it's a very ancient profession and one that has produced many saints, not the least of which was St. Thomas More. And so in the practice of law, it's important to support what you do with your time, what you do with your profession, by infusing into it the great spirituality of being a lawyer, the long history of Catholic lawyers and bringing about justice in the world.
Now, in a previous life, you were a lawyer.
That's true.
What happened with the transition?
I wasn't
from
happy.
From lawyer to priesthood.
Yeah, I grew up in the 80s, and, I had everything the culture said would make me happy, and I had a nice job and all these things, and I just found that I needed more. Now, since becoming a friar, I have practiced as a lawyer, though, so it's not like an either-or. It's kind of
exactly.
A both-and.
Exactly. In fact, there's a gift you bring as a priest in the whole sense of the legal, with the law thing. Mm-hmm. And, Alex, you got an interesting, your background is sports journalism. You were a sports writer somewhere?
Correct, yes. In Houston, Texas, which is where I'm originally from, I was a golf writer, and I focused on writing about golf and the local golf scene. And it was interesting. If any of the listeners are big golfers, I remember covering the Texas State High School Championship in 2007, and some 14-year-old kid named Jordan Spieth won. And
no kidding.
Yeah, so
In Texas.
That's where he's from. He's from Dallas. And so I have pictures because I had to, writing for a smaller publication, you had to be a reporter and a photographer. And so I have pictures of scrawny Jordan Spieth, freshman in high school, lugging his own bag. And it's been really interesting. And no one would have ever thought this kid is going to go on.
So you were covering that event for this Jordan Spieth, little 14-year-old kid, who is just a tremendous golfer today.
After Father Greg wrapped up that segment with the lawyers, he talked with two organizers of an upcoming presentation called The Women of TV. Let's take a listen.
Chicago Archdiocesan Council of Catholic Women are presenting The Women of TV on Saturday, February 17th. This is billed as a retrospective look at the women of TV who have shaped our culture. Our guest in studio, Elsa DePalma, the creator and MC of the show Women of TV, and Janine Gazeas, teacher placement coordinator, the Archdiocese and Special Events Coordinator for the ACCW. Elsa and Janine, welcome to our program this morning. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Now I have to ask you, did you watch the Super Bowl last night?
Sure did.
Of course, I did. Who were you rooting for?
I was rooting for Philadelphia.
Me too.
Me too. Me too. Now, only because I'm a diehard Chicago Bears fan, but I felt Philadelphia was the underdog. And also, my hat's off to New England. They're a great team. But it was just, it was a great TV game to watch. And we were just watching the game at home with family or friends.
Yes.
Yes.
Did you have some parties going on in the house?
No party, but a lot of fun food.
Yes, you know, lots of food.
My brother told me, he said that 27 million people will call in sick today for work.
Oh, my goodness.
I heard that.
Work. 27 million. And there was also yesterday, this is annually for Super Bowl, more pizzas sold tomorrow or yesterday than any other day of the year with all the pizza parties and all that. And this is amazing. So tell us about this tremendous February 17th show coming up. Give it a shot also.
Well, it's the annual, or I guess it's semi-annual ACW fundraiser, and they always have a luncheon, and they always look for a entertainment component. And the show, Women of TV, is a show that I developed maybe 5 years ago for my church, which is St. Giles, fundraiser. And it is a look at women who have influenced all of us in some way by the character they portrayed on TV. So we have 18 television shows that will be represented. We have 22 women, because some of them are pairs, like Lucy and Ethel, obviously. And we were fortunate enough, and it was our task, to try to include women from all over the city of Chicago, or as many of the diocese women that we could fit. So we have 14 parishes being representative in the show. So we've looked all over to find women who can portray, who look like, and who can carry the persona of these women. So we start out with Lucy and Ethel, of course, and why were they relevant?
A classic TV program.
Absolutely, and why were Lucy and Ethel so relevant? Well, there's a lot of reasons, but one of them was that it was a very, very important change in the way women were portrayed on television. Lucy was, in many ways, rebellious against a husband, but she did it with humor and silly antics and so forth. So prior to that, women of that era were portrayed as the docile kind of perfect homemaker. And here was crazy Lucy and Ethel carrying on in so many of the things that we all know and love and still watch today. So we
And that program started back, in the early 50s?
Oh, early 50s, yes. Yeah, yeah. And
that was my mother's all-time favorite comedy.
I still watch it.
The reruns,
Yeah, sure. Well, it's watched all over the world.
Remember that one scene in one of the programs where she and Ethel are on the line with the candy?
Oh, my gosh.
And they're jamming the candy in their mouth because they just can't keep up with the conveyor belt. And my mother howled at that scene.
You still watch it. It's like,
yes.
There are some shows like that you will watch forever, and you'll see it.
And you don't tire of it.
You'll laugh at the same thing over and over again.
Exactly.
So we do that, and then we have a lot of the kind of groundbreaking shows. I did a lot of research on this in order to create an edutainment kind of show, because I think women are interested in learning something new, but also we want them to laugh and enjoy the show. So we have Carol Burnett, we have Carol Brady from the Brady Bunch, you know, these kind of sweet, goody-goody women. And then we have a lot of the groundbreaking African-American women of TV, like Louise Jefferson and Florida Evans. And we talk about why those shows were important and how they were actually record-setting in the fact that prior to that time there were no sitcoms on TV of portraying African-American families doing normal activities and having issues with everyday life.
And then, Janine, your role in this whole program will be what of this whole show?
Well, I am the events coordinator, so I'm working with Elsa to kind of pull it all together. We helped getting her the models through our organizations, Paris organizations. We recruited as much as we could. And then along with the luncheon and show, we offer a grand raffle, which is part of our fundraiser.
Where is it being held, by the way?
It's at the Drury Lane, Oak Brook.
Oh, sure.
Yes, beautiful facility.
February 17th, at what time?
It starts 11 o'clock a.m., so we figure it'll run about 4 hours.
A four-hour, wow.
Well, we have the show, we have the luncheon, and we have our raffles. You know, what's a Catholic organization without the raffles?
And we'll hear from Father Greg again later in this program. Stick around. We'll check in with Deacon John after this break.
The Word Made Clear is exactly what its name implies. It's an easy-to-understand explanation of the Word of God, the Gospel. Hello, I'm Father James McElhone, Director of Biblical Formation for the Archdiocese of Chicago. I'd like to invite you to take our free online Bible study program by going to thewordmadeclear.org. Our website offers an audio-based guide to the Gospels of Mark, Matthew, Luke, and John. Listen to my lectures and follow along with the handouts provided. There are even discussion guides. You can also explore the biblical roots of the Mass. And there are links to a wide variety of biblical sources that will benefit both teachers and students of the Sacred Scriptures. Just go to wordmadeclear.org to experience our free online Bible study program. Again, it's free at wordmadeclear.org. It's the Word of God. Enjoy.
We invite you to watch Catholic Chicago this weekend, featuring a conversation with Cardinal Blaise Cupich and video highlights from across the Archdiocese. Here's host Todd Williamson.
We'll talk with Cardinal Blaise Cupich about how tax credit scholarships benefit families. We'll take you to the National Migration Mass and to the March for Life Chicago. And we'll show you how the annual Catholic Appeal helps the many vital ministries of the Archdiocese of Chicago.
Watch Catholic Chicago Friday at 7 p.m. on Chicago Loop Cable, Channel 25, and Sunday afternoon at 3 on the Comcast Network, Channel 100.
Welcome back to Catholic Chicago Week in Review here on Relevant Radio 950 and 930 AM. You're listening to highlights of the Archdiocese of Chicago radio programs that air Monday through Friday at 8 in the morning on WNDZ 750 AM. Let's kick off this segment with Deacon John Cook, who hosts our Black Catholic Initiative program. He talked with Tamala Odom, a member of the Delta Sigma Theta sorority, about the history of their organization that spans over 100 years.
Good morning, Tamala.
Good morning. You know, when you just said that, I just got excited. Oh. I just love being a Delta.
And I did not share with you that I'm a Sigma.
Oh, so it's good to have that Greek family love in the building this morning.
That's right. And I pledged at Eastern Illinois, because you and I haven't had opportunity to talk, but right. I pledged at Eastern, and you pledged where?
I pledged at Chicago Alumni.
Oh, okay. And so where is this chapter?
Chicago Alumni is, it's housed on, it's housed in Chicago on King Drive, but our members are everywhere. Our service area is all of Chicago and Oak Lawn. So we have a lot of territory that we cover. And our ultimate goal is to bring important community public acts to people who are in need.
Okay, and so tell us a little bit about the Deltas and their history.
And what a rich history it is. I think it's so appropriate that we're having this conversation during Black History Month.
Amen.
Because our organization has contributed much to Black history. Our organization was started over 100 years ago, January 13th, 1913. So we just recently celebrated another anniversary of our continued public service. We started on the campus of Howard University, which is a historically Black college, historically Black university, I should say, in Washington, D.C., where 22 African-American women got together and they saw a need to react to the culture and the climate in the United States at that time, a time when some people call it a double X or a double negative with these women because they were African-American and they were women. and they did not have the rights as white men or even white women. And they wanted to change. They wanted to invoke change, and they were not afraid to invoke change during this time in the United States. And they formed an organization. They worked to create change in the United States, especially on their campus. And most of these women were educators. So you just imagine the type of personality they had. I like to get creative sometimes when I think about the founders. And their first public service act was the Women's Suffrage March in March 1913, where they marched with white women who were trying to get the right to vote.
Okay. And that was when?
March 1913.
Wow. Some time ago. And we're having the same issues still, though.
And which shows that our organization is still relevant. Yes. Because some of those issues are still persistent in the United States.
So what are some of the things that you all are doing today as a service to your community?
That's a great question, because our service area, as I mentioned, is Chicago and Oak Lawn. And just recently, we had a conversation with law enforcement executives to find out what are some real issues within that service area that we can be impactful and bring awareness to our service area. And in Inglewood area and on the west side of Chicago, the Humboldt Park area, those two areas alone have the highest crime rate in Chicago.
Oh, wow.
Now, when you think about crime in Chicago, you hear about the recent carjackings. There's violence with shootings. There's so much going on. But those two police districts, the 11th and the 4th Police District, have the most areas of crime. So we saw a need, and our organization, in partnership with Noble, which is an organization for law enforcement executives in Chicago, well, nationwide, but they have a chapter here in Chicago, we are working together to host a community forum to talk about ways in which we can bridge the gap between law enforcement and the community. Because let's face it, the community wants to be safer. However, those communities are people who are black and brown that live in those communities. And they have they are concerned when it comes to law enforcement. They are afraid of law enforcement. Sometimes the last resort is to call law enforcement and to take matters into their own hands. And when they call law enforcement, they're afraid that they may lose their lives. You know, you think about all the situations, and I don't have to recount them all, where innocent people have lost their lives and from the hands of police officers. And it may be justified. It may not. We don't know. We just know that the situation oftentimes looks bad. But we still need law enforcement, and we don't want our communities to be afraid of police officers. So we are hosting an event, two forums, where we're going to allow the community to come out and speak to law enforcement, share their concerns, and we'll also have other organizations there that can talk through how we can make our communities in these two areas that have the most crime be safer.
Thanks to Deacon John and his guest, Tamala Odom. Next up this past Tuesday was Catholic Charities President Monsignor Michael Boland, who talked to his guests about an important mentoring program.
Mentoring at-risk youths has many benefits. You know, we look at the academic research shows that kids who have mentors are more likely to be healthier, do well in school, have higher-paying jobs, and oftentimes avoid negative influences. Even though they might be in the neighborhood, this roles of mentors can really be very positive on the child as well as on the family. And Catholic Charities has a youth mentoring program in both Lake County, Illinois, and in the Chicago Back of the Yards community. And so joining me today is Sarah Loffman and to Aviri Godinez, sorry, to share about this program. And so I'm really grateful to Sarah and to Aviri. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. This is very exciting. Maybe, Sarah, you could tell us a little about the mentoring program that Catholic Charities offers for youth.
Yeah, well, as I was saying when I came in, the last time I had an opportunity to be on the show was when we had just started our program in Waukegan, and that was 5 years ago. So that is now a well-established program that is serving youth ages 9 to 12 in Waukegan. And then we have our newest program, which just started in Back of the Yards. And so Viri is our program coordinator, but she is also a mentor. And that is a slightly different model in that although we're still matching youth with individual mentors who will be meeting with their mentee on a weekly basis and doing activities with them, they also participate in these group sessions every week that are led by Viri. So when our young people are waiting to be matched, which unfortunately can take a very long time, which is why we love this opportunity to get the word out about mentors, because we are always looking for new people to step up. then they can still be receiving a service while they're waiting to be matched with that individual person. So two great programs that we're really proud of.
Yeah, that's really wonderful. I grew up not far from the Back of the Yards. I grew up around 55th and Kedzie. So Back of the Yards was right next door. My mom actually lived in the Back of the Yards for when she grew up as a child and stuff. So went to St. Augustine's, which was the mm-hmm. parish there, St. Augustine's. And so just really a great place. Maybe, Viri, you could tell us a little bit about your role in the youth mentoring program.
Well, as Sarah mentioned previous to this, I am a mentor myself, so I provide group services or group mentoring, and I also provide one-on-one mentoring. Well, not necessarily, but that's while the boys are waiting for their one-on-one mentor.
Mm-hmm. That's great. That's good. Okay. Because it is, I'm sure it's really sometimes challenging to get mentors, you know, and so that's why when we're here today, we're going to try to have a conversation. And maybe we could talk a little about why was the Back of the Yards chosen to help expand this program, which I think has done so well up in Waukegan.
Well, Catholic Charities already is present in the Back of the Yard, and already with its great reputation there, you know, we just wanted to provide additional services, and that was through the Youth Mentorship Program.
Mm-hmm. And where does it offer it at?
Well, we have multiple locations in schools, but our main location is the St. Joseph Child Care Center on 47th
and 48th Paulina. And Paulina.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes, that's great. And what are some of the challenges the community faces?
Well, most of all, you know, the main one, it would be community violence. There's also the lack of resources in schools. And, you know, just many people outside the community look beyond the beauty of home. And this, I'm speaking on behalf as a resident of Back of the Yards myself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is really a beautiful area. Mm-hmm. And it is really, it's hard when we deal with the violence. Mm-hmm. And it's been entrenched for quite a while with violence and gangs, and it's just so sad mm-hmm. because it's such a, I know when we have the program we took over many years ago with Sister Joellen, the Casa Catalina, mm-hmm. and the challenges that some people can't cross Ashland to go there because of the gangs mm-hmm. or the gang lines, and for some people, I'm sure that are listening, that's always hard to imagine. The children aren't realized that these, in a sense, they're not necessarily artificial, they're real boundaries, but they're mm-hmm. artificial in a way that you don't see any reason to stop you from crossing the street. But in reality, yeah, it's tough. And so I think that these are the kind of places, just like in that community, because we have been, again, as you said, Viri, there a long history in the Back of the Yards. But also, you know, it's so people know and trust us, you know, especially because of the extraordinary work that Sister Joellen has done and continues to bring to that community.
It's always good to hear from Monsignor Boland about the great work being done by Catholic Charities every day of the year. And we'll have more interesting guests this Saturday morning here on Relevant Radio 950 and 930 AM, back after a break.
The hurricanes of 2017 dealt a devastating blow to poor communities across the U.S. People there reached out to the church for help and found it. Faith communities rallied to provide assistance to those in need, and we helped too. We are Catholic Extension. We're helping rebuild churches and schools, and we're supporting communities in areas destroyed by the hurricanes. Funds are desperately needed. To donate, go to catholicextension.org/hurricane relief or call 888-473-2484.
The cemetery ministry is a core ministry of our Catholic faith tied to the corporal works of mercy. It's comforting to know that our Catholic cemeteries are caring for the remains of our loved ones awaiting the resurrection. There are 44 Archdiocese of Chicago Catholic cemeteries willing to help you in your time of loss. Call 708-449-6100 or visit CatholicCemeteriesChicago.org. Catholic Cemeteries, serving the Catholic community since 1837.
You're listening to Catholic Chicago Week in Review on Relevant Radio 950 AM and 930 AM. Every Saturday from 9 to 10 AM, the Archdiocese of Chicago presents programming about the people, events, and issues that touch our lives. Thanks for letting us be part of your morning. Now again, Catholic Chicago Week in Review.
Welcome back to Catholic Chicago Week in Review. I'm Jim Dish, Director of the Archdiocese of Chicago's Radio TV office. Every Saturday morning here on Relevant Radio, we listen to highlights of our Catholic Chicago radio programs that air throughout the week. We begin this segment with a highlight from our Fully Alive program, hosted by the Office of Human Dignity and Solidarity.
We're talking with Don Fitzpatrick and Damon Owens about theology of the body and the work of our Chastity Education Initiative. So, Don, we were just talking over the break about, obviously Damon is here all this week in doing a variety of presentations, and we wanted to make sure that the folks listening, if they wanted to try to catch one of those, that they knew what some of those opportunities are. So would you be able to share that real quick?
Well, certainly. So some of the things that anybody would be welcome to join us at tomorrow afternoon at noon, he's actually going to be at the Meyer Center, which is our offices, and speaking about theology of the body and how it informs our lives and certainly how we can live our life with joy. And that's at noon at the Meyer Center, which is off 3525 South Lake Park Avenue. If you'd like to come to that, and lunch is certainly provided as well, then you can call our office at 312-534-5355 and just let us know that you'd like to come, and we certainly would be happy to have you. Another opportunity is tomorrow night down at Our Lady of the Woods, which is in, I believe, Oak Hills or Orland Hills, and there'll be a presentation for adults. The title is Marriage by Any Other Name. So it's going to be a really great presentation that will delve into, you know, our identity and why we're called to marriage, why some people are called to marriage, certainly, but and why it's between a man and a woman. It's going to be a really great presentation. I think it's going to just really pique people's interest and get their juices flowing and have them really some great discussion. So that's a great opportunity, and that's free to the public, 7 o'clock. So you're welcome to come to that. And if anyone out there is a teacher or even a catechist, you're certainly welcome to come out to St. Cletus in LaGrange. There's a teacher continuing ed day on Friday. But if you want to come to the teacher continuing ed day, and we will have some practical information on what is theology of the body and how can you inform your classroom experience with theology of the body, that's Friday from 8 to 2:30 at St. Cletus in LaGrange. But again, if you're interested in that one, please call our office at 312-534-5355, and there's a $20 charge associated with that to include lunch.
Great. And yeah, mm-hmm. Our Lady of the Woods, yeah, you're correct. It is in Orland Park. It looks like the address is 10731 West 131st Street. So again, that's tomorrow. All right. Wonderful. Damon, one of the things, obviously, theology of the body, is so central to the teachings of St. Pope John Paul II, and, we still refer to him and the various talks that he gave on that. I'm wondering, certainly as Pope Benedict XVI came along, and even today with Pope Francis, and, his conversation about the throwaway culture, what are ways that you kind of connect, these really rich teachings kind of with, we go through time and kind of connect it to contemporary issues that people are talking about.
Well, I think what's beautiful with, in generally, our faith and more specifically theology of the body as a lens to understand our faith is that it really does track well as other sciences, as psychology and neurobiology and, you know, even genetics. You know, as the scientific understanding of the material world increases, it really helps to have a language of theology to connect it, reconnect it back to what our faith has already taught. That alone is nuclear. I mean, that's a powerful means to counter the idea that somehow science and faith or reason and faith are opposed. So we're seeing developments in things like neurobiology and sociology and the understanding of longevity and life. And it's affirming real things about relationship.
Mm-hmm.
We're seeing memory and human formation, even from little babies to be socially thriving and healthy and flourishing, and it's deeply relational. We're seeing, you know, this even with things like gender dysphoria, that name alone speaks about, you know, an opposite of euphoria, you know, where you're not happy, you're not flourishing. So if we're attentive, and if we are really secure in our faith, then we recognize that wherever the culture has attention to, the theology of the body can provide more depth, more breadth, and really an attractive way to draw people into a fuller understanding of who they are, of why they're here. And it does take a little bit of courage, because it almost always begins with something that's contradictory. They think, oh, we've finally proven that our faith is wrong, right? And then you realize, no, actually, you just confirmed it.
Sure.
And the theology of the body, because of this identity, relationships, and mission, I find it to be, you know, it's exciting, but also it takes courage to address issues like gender and marriage and masculinity, femininity of parenting, you know. So I think it's a very exciting place to be. I couldn't imagine doing anything else.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, kind of the importance of relationships, I mean, I'm recalling just a couple weeks ago I was looking at some sort of a study where they were basically trying to figure out, you know, the people that lived to 100, like what were common patterns in their life experience. And they looked at 15 kind of prevalent indicators that, you know, kind of tie into, you know, things that people normally attribute to living a long life. And, you know, it was things like, you know, alcohol, tobacco use, exercise, obesity, I mean, a whole bunch of different health factors. But I want to say that the one that by far kind of was most prevalent than any others was a strong, you know, kind of social relationships, you know, like that you have, you know, as you get older in age, you have people that stop by and check on you, you know, that you're the type of person that when the mail carrier comes by your house, that you strike up a conversation. So it's kind of just, it really speaks to, yeah, like as you said, I mean, the data bears it out that there, you know, the more interconnected we are and the more that we are in right relationship, not only does that lead to a more flourishing of you know, the life and the time that we're given to us, but it leads to a longer life.
Busy times as always for the folks in our Office of Human Dignity and Solidarity. Stick around. We'll be back after a couple messages from the Archdiocese of Chicago.
Ever think of donating your car? You can donate a car that you no longer need to Catholic Charities. The donation will help needy people throughout Cook and Lake Counties. Donating your car is easy. Call us at 877-786-GIVE from anywhere in the country. That's 877-786-4483. Pickup is free. We do the paperwork and you get a tax deduction. Catholic Charities accepts cars, trucks, vans, motorcycles, or boats in almost any condition. No need to pay hefty repair bills. Avoid the hassle of selling. Calls taken 7 days a week at 877-786-GIVE. That's 877-786-4483. Or go online to catholiccharities.net.
Pope Francis calls us to draw near to the poor, to encounter them, to meet their gaze, to embrace them. The Catholic Campaign for Human Development lives out this message of solidarity by addressing root causes of poverty. CCHD accompanies low-income communities as they confront the unjust structures that affect them. Support the work of CCHD by donating during the annual collection on November 18th and 19th. Visit ccchdchicago.org to learn more and to contribute online.
Welcome back to Catholic Chicago Week in Review. You've been listening to highlights from our great lineup of programs from the Archdiocese of Chicago, programs that can be heard Monday through Friday from 8 to 9 in the morning on 750 AM. Back to Father Greg Sakowicz for this segment of the show. Father Greg and co-host Ratz Markeski talked with Bishop George Rassus about the opening of a new campus in Waukegan for Cristo Rey St. Martin College Prep. Let's hear what they had to say.
Well, tell us about the whole thing moving into this ex-Kmart.
Why don't you tell us about the Cristo Rey model, first of all?
Certainly. Well, the Cristo Rey model began here in Chicago when the Cardinal Bernardine at the time had a conversation with several of the Jesuits who wanted to establish a high school for young people that were from limited economic backgrounds, and Cardinal Bernardine suggested they begin in Pilsen. And so the Jesuits established the first Cristo Rey High School in Pilsen. I believe it opened in 1996. And that's where it began, and today is still located there. And since that time, the Cristo Rey model became known all over the country. And currently in the country, there are 32 Cristo Rey model high schools, three in the Chicago area and others in major metropolitan areas all over the country, from the East Coast to Midwest to Southwest and Northwest of our country and in the middle of the country.
The
as
three
well.
In Chicago you have, or the area would be Pilsen, Waukegan, and the third one is?
Christ the King in Austin, the Austin neighborhood on the west side of the city.
And what makes these schools unique is the work-study component. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
The Cristo Rey model basically is they're Catholic, although they're open to all. They're college preparatory, they're needs-based, and then fourthly, all of the students must participate in the corporate internship program, the work-study program we have. And by doing that, we send young people out to entry-level clerical positions in many offices, certainly here in Lake County and in the Chicago area as well. And they work 5 days a month. They share the job with four students. So there's the Monday worker, the Tuesday worker, the Wednesday worker, the Thursday worker, and they alternate Fridays. And the income from that those positions supports almost three-quarters of their tuition. So that's how the model works.
So I can't quite wrap my mind around the logistics of educating those students who are rotating, being out of school one day a week.
They have the schedule arranged so that their school days are longer than the usual school day, and their classes, they don't miss class at all by being out one day. Perhaps the freshmen might be out on one day and the sophomores one day and the juniors and seniors. So that's how they work the logistics of the program.
Yeah. So a longer day into a four-day week that makes up for that missed day.
That's correct. And we solicit the jobs, invite corporate partners to join us, which many have, and then we transport the students to and from their workplace, and they are supervised at work and so forth and so on. It's just a great model.
What kind of feedback do you get from the corporate people about these young students?
Generally, they're very, very impressed with the creativity and the energy and the sometimes the skills that the young people bring to the workplace, whether it's being able to translate into Spanish and back and forth, or computer work and all sorts of things. And there are monthly evaluations that come from the supervisors to the school. So our evaluations are always very, very positive, very positive.
Yeah.
And so the, as I say, the corporate partners really appreciate it and certainly are been very generous in their partnership with us.
So, Bishop, you were telling us about this unique model of education employed at the Cristo Rey schools, where the students work one day a week throughout their 4 years as interns at various corporations in the area. I was interested, do they stay at the same job placement for all 4 years?
They can. Oftentimes, companies will request students to stay with them. Sometimes the students want a different experience, which is fine. So, but it's amazing the number of companies and the students, when you talk to them, who say, you know, when you ask their workplace, how long have you been there? Well, I've been there all 4 years.
Wow.
You know?
So, and how do you go about recruiting these different workplaces?
Well, through business contacts, personal contacts. We talk to the HR people or contacts within the different business organizations and ask for, perhaps for an interview and that kind of thing. And we invite them to come to our school, and also we invite them to meet some of our students. And it's been a wonderful relationship both back and forth.
So I'm assuming the employers have been very pleased for the most part with the young people who have been hired. And now Crystal Ray Model started in Waukegan in what year, Bishop?
We started the process in 2001. Mm-hmm. We opened the school with 100 students at 1 North Genesee Street in Waukegan in 2004. And we occupied that site for 2 years and quickly outgrew it because we started with 75 freshmen, 25 sophomores. So in 2006, we moved to the St. Joseph Parish site in South Waukegan, and that's where we have been all these years.
Until next Tuesday.
We hope so.
Yeah, because of the snow.
So we use the school there, which was built for grade school age children and students, and we have 9 mobile units on the property. And so the students are very much looking forward to moving into our permanent site, which
now,
I
have any students
all these years.
Have any students been part of the workforce in the same place for 4 years, then go on to college, graduate college, and then come back to that place of employment from high school?
That is possible. But, you know, also the students during some of their breaks and during the summertime, some of the companies, a good portion of our students are hired in their free time, and they're able to earn a little income that way. So the companies really value their presence there. And it's been a wonderful.
It's a tremendous experience to be in the classroom for education, to get into the work world. When I was in high school and college seminary, I was actually working at 7-Eleven in Park Ridge. It was a great way to meet people, interact with people, get into the business world, and you had to study in the high school level at Notre Dame and now it's college seminary. And
are there any plans for the St. Joseph site once you leave there?
Not really. It's more than 100 years old, and it's part of Most Blessed Trinity Parish, so they are possibly going to lease out some of the space. I'm not sure exactly how or who was interested, but it really belongs to the parish there.
Yeah. Now, it must have been no small task to transform a former Kmart into classrooms and gymnasia and all of the kinds of facilities you need for high school. How did you go about that, and where did you get the funding?
Well, first of all, we don't have a gymnasium yet. The Kmart is we're occupying the west half of the building, which will give us everything we need to move the present school over there. The east half of the building will contain 3 different components, and as they are funded, we will build them. One is the Faith Center, another will be the Fine Arts Center, and then the Physical Fitness Center, which hopefully in the long run we'll be able to build a modest gym for the students. So but everything we need it will be there for them to move in. Also, if you wanted to go to our website or to YouTube, there's a wonderful video, a time-lapse video that's put out by the McShane Construction Company, who were our contractors, and then Juan Moreno, the architect, that shows the Kmart, and in a minute and a half, shows the transformation of how that took. Fascinating.
Now, where's that at, Bishop? How do you get to that YouTube?
It could be on YouTube, or if you go to our, just Google St. Martin de Porres College Prep Waukegan, mm-hmm. or St. Martin Waukegan, you'll have access to our school website, but also on YouTube. And there's some wonderful, wonderful videos there that talk about the day in the life of a student, the transformation of our building, and all kinds of things over the years. So I encourage our listeners and your listeners to do that. And especially
that is fascinating, a time lapse.
Yes, yes.
Now, you keep saying we, and I get the impression that you're very much involved and have a very strong sense of ownership about this school and the students. Tell us how it is that you're so involved with the school. That doesn't seem to be typical of auxiliaries and the schools within the vicariates.
Well, I was pastor at St. Mary's in Lake Forest, and Jerry Bishop Kakanis was our vicar, and I became aware of the Christo Rey model. And also, our sharing parishes were in Waukegan, and I knew our parish knew the community very well and was trying to charitable outreach. But in the history of Waukegan and North Chicago, there was only one girls' Catholic high school established by the Sisters of the Holy Child in the 1920s, and that closed in 1975. There was never a Catholic boys' high school in Waukegan or North Chicago. So the only other options for the young people there would be Carmel High School in
Mundelein
or St. Joe's in Kenosha, which were a world away and were not affordable. And so I was having some conversations with Bishop Kakanis about why can't we investigate the Christo Rey model? And just as he was leaving for Tucson in 2001, he said, well, why don't you take the lead?
So well. Hand the baton.
So from the beginning, that's what I've done.
Oh, and wow.
It's not about me, first and foremost, but all I did was talk to some of our parishioners and say there's a foundation established now to replicate the Christo Rey model, which was the Kasson Foundation from Menlo Park, California. And we need to write a grant letter, which we did. They accepted our proposal and gave us feasibility study funds. And then when the study was accepted, promised us some startup funds. And so between 2001 and 2004, we did a lot of homework, and ultimately were able to open the school. And I was chair of the feasibility study and the founding board chair. And now I'm chair emeritus for life, whatever that means.
All right. Well, I had no idea that you were so
incredibly
involved
from the beginning.
Right, from the beginning.
Yeah. That's wonderful.
Right. But all we've ever done is just invite people to the table and let us tell our story, meet some of our students, and see what they do. And the story sells itself.
Amen.
And very successful.
Congratulations to Bishop Rassus and to the teachers, staff, parents, and students at Christo Rey St. Martin College Prep in Waukegan. Our final segment promotes a very interesting and always well-attended event coming up on Monday, February 26th, the 23rd Annual Joseph Cardinal Bernardine Jerusalem Lecture.
We're speaking this morning with three wonderful guests, Dr. John Nilsen, Mrs. Emily Soloff, and Dr. Elena Procario-Foley, about the upcoming Cardinal Bernardine Jerusalem Lecture, which is a lecture that helps to promote relations between Catholics and Jews. You know, I live, and Emily, you would know this, I live in the most Jewish neighborhood in all of Chicago, Orthodox Jewish primarily. Even our Jewel Food Store has a very large kosher section, rabbis supervising the deli and all of that. So I feel very, very close to the Jewish people. I've always loved the Jewish faith. My kids always joke that I really want to be Jewish. You know, they think, Dad, if you weren't Catholic, you would be Jewish. And I say, yeah, you're right. If I weren't Catholic, I would be Jewish. You know, for me, it's kind of like the air that I breathe because, you know, I open my front door in the morning and there are my Jewish neighbors right across the street. And we take care of one another and we're, you know, it feels like we have a little microcosm of Catholic-Jewish relations going on there.
In the neighborhood.
Yeah, right there. Although the Christians are now becoming very a minority in that neighborhood, which I kind of value, too, is like, I never had an experience like this, you know, being a minority in Chicago as a Catholic, being a minority. So the closeness of this is very important to me, you know, that this is real, you know, that we really do need to understand our Jewish neighbors and we need to love them because we wouldn't be here without the Jewish people, you know. It was through the Jewish people that God sent the Savior. John, tell us about this lecture and who primarily it's trying to attract. Is this for scholars or is this for everybody?
This is for everybody.
It's one of the things that makes the Jerusalem lecture quite unique
there are scholarly dialogues going on everywhere, but there are very few opportunities for Jews and Catholics in the pews to come together and hear together in the same venue the alternating Jewish or Catholic perspectives on very diverse issues. And in the 23 years that we've been doing this, we've covered a lot of ground. And everyone can walk away from the lecture saying, I learned something.
So really, all are welcome on February 26th. And what time does it begin?
7 o'clock.
At the Anshe Emmett Synagogue. And that's located where?
That's located on Pine Grove in Lakeview.
Pine Grove and Lakeview. And
is there parking?
maybe
is there parking anywhere in Lakeview?
Arrive early. And
there.
Also, I just learned that Dr. Elena Procario Foley, you are the first woman speaker in the 23-year history of this Joseph Cardinal Bernardine Jerusalem Lecture Series. That's congratulations. That is incredible.
Yes, add to my fear and trembling. When I started my research and was trying to find, who else had given the lecture and things of that nature, I was quite amazed to discover that I am the first. So,
congratulations. That is an incredible honor.
Thank you.
Elena, some of us know you've been working in this field very long and very hard. Some of us thought you could just pull the lecture out of your back pocket without any further work.
Well, thank you, John. Tell my dean.
Pull the notes together from New York to Chicago on the plane. Exactly. Do it on the plane with a little postcard.
Now, I'm going to assume, and we know what happens to people who assume, but I'm going to assume anyway from your two last names, Procario Foley, that you're probably not Jewish.
No, I am not. I am. I was born and raised Roman Catholic, and my husband is the director of mission and ministry for Iona College, where we both work.
Oh, wonderful!
So he's Irish German Catholic.
That's the work that I most recently came out of, mission and ministry at a university. So tell us, how did you come to become involved in Catholic Jewish relations and have that as your main area of study?
A couple of ways. First of all, my wonderful professor, John Levinson, when he was at the Divinity School of the University of Chicago, I had him for two classes, and I had come to study Christology and had a couple of classes with him, and in the course of just studying Hebrew Bible in translation with him, one day I said, wow, never thought of this before, didn't get talked about in college, but I need to understand Judaism to be a good Catholic theologian. So that was a process of coming to that earlier in life. And I continued my studies in Christology, and I focused on the Dominican Father Edward Skillebeck.
Skillebeck. Oh, yeah, what a theologian. Wow.
Right. And he did so much work in bringing to theological attention all the biblical and historical criticism. And that actually, so in working on my dissertation, that continued in the background to feed my understanding that I needed to do as much as I could to understand Judaism. On a different note, I have to support myself in graduate school, I ended up being the what I call the resident Gentile in Hillel House, 5715 Woodlawn, South Woodlawn Avenue.
Oh, really? Wow.
So there's a 1991 document called Dialogue and Proclamation, and they talk about the Dialogue of Life. So that's where I lived the Dialogue of Life, shoveled snow on Shabbat quite constantly. And
maybe you could join us tonight in Chicago and shovel snow.
The best way to find out more about the Jerusalem Lecture and to register is to go to archchicago.org and search Jerusalem Lecture. That wraps up things for this Saturday morning. I'm Jim Dish for Catholic Chicago Week in Review. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Join us every Saturday morning for Catholic Chicago Week in Review. You can stream our programs live or listen to past programs by visiting our website, archchicago.org, and clicking on Radio TV. And please connect with Catholic Chicago on social media.